and assure success.
Back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on American Freedom Radio and, incidentally, thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Always a pleasure to be here and read out the fabulous news that we have. First of all, foreclosure frauds by major banks increasing. This is from Global Research. Isn't that nice? Wall Street's raised its voice against any government moratorium on foreclosures, even as evidence mounts that banks systematically and illegally falsified documents in order to expedite hundreds of thousands or even millions of foreclosures. Documented examples of abuse include banks hiring contractors and what one Goldman Sachs executive referred to as Burger King kids to process thousands of foreclosure documents each week, all the while declaring to courts they were familiar with the cases. Lenders also falsified signatures, notary stamps, and tossed legal documents into the garbage. Every major bank is implicated in the widening scandal. So just watch out. Just remember, it's not getting mugged on the way home that you should be worried about. It's having your home getting taken off you while you're sitting in it by the bank that loaned you the money to buy it. Speaking of which, Scientific American, kill more babies to save the Earth. Following the leak of a United Nations blueprint which outlined the plan to replace fear-mongering about global warming with the contrived threat of overpopulation, a Scientific American report mimics precisely that talking point, pushed by the notion that programs of mass abortion and birth control need to be encouraged in order to reduce the amount of humans on the planet exhaling carbon dioxide. Ultimately, family planning alone, or the American Eugenics Society, as they were once called, such as the use of condoms and other reproductive health services in parts of the world with growing populations, including the US, could restrain population growth significantly, this analysis finds, writes David Biello. And to back up his argument, Biello links to an article by the completely discredited eugenicist Paul Ehrlich, who once stated that everyone will disappear in a cloud blue steam. Overpopulation is a myth, ladies and gentlemen, in case you haven't known. In order for a population to replace itself, just that, and not face extinction, needs a birth rate of at least 2.1. That's 2.1 babies per chick, all right? Because guys can't replace themselves. And also, on top of that, with so many vapid soulless scum out there not having children at all and not knowing the joy of being a parent, it turns out that you've actually got to make more and more babies in order to keep up with the play. And apparently, America is now facing a population crisis similar to Japan, where, well, more or less, you're borderlining on extinction. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will, and we'll be right back before you all die of extinction.
Well, there's only one thing I need to know. Whose side are you on?
Oh, yeah. Tonight we're gonna make love. You know how I know? Because it's Wednesday. And Wednesday night is the night that we usually make love. It's because it's when everything is just right. There's nothing good on TV. You haven't had your social netball team practice, so you're not too tired. Oh, yeah. Sounds like it's all on. You say something to me like, I might go to bed, I've got work in the morning. But I know what you mean. You mean, oh, yeah. It's business time. It's business time.
It's business. It's business time.
That's what you mean. You mean it's business time. Oh.
Oh. It's business. It's business time.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Welcome back to the Vinny Eastwood Show with Will on American Freedom Radio and thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. How many out there are enjoying your Diet Coke? If you are, this will make you very, very uncomfortable indeed. Or if you're drinking enough of it, you probably won't have anything that will arouse you from your death sleep. Now, 19th of October, from Mission Possible International, Betty Martinez sends an article. A new study by Dr. Mirando Sofruti at the Ramazzini Institute demonstrated that aspartame administered in feed in Swiss mice induces significant dose-related increases of hepatocellular carcinomas and of alveolar bronchular carcinoma in males. Dosages were 32,000, 8,000, or 2,000, or 0 parts per million, beginning on day 12 of gestation and lasting until death. While the new study is breaking, the history of aspartame being a carcinogen has always been known, as Donald Rumsfeld, of course, figured out when he was head of Sara Lee, which was most directly responsible for making it legal, despite the fact that all of the test animals frickin' died or got some disgustingly terrible, rough illness. And aspartame was well known to cause cancer from the beginning. On August 1st, 1985, FDA toxicologist Dr. Adrian Gross told Congress that at least one of Searle's studies, quote, has established beyond any reasonable doubt that aspartame is capable of inducing brain tumors in experimental animals, and that this redisposition of it is extremely high significance. In view of these indications that the cancer-causing potential of aspartame is a matter that had been established way beyond any reasonable doubt, one can ask, what is the reason for the apparent refusal by the FDA to invoke for this food additive the so-called Delaney Amendment to the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act? The Delaney Amendment makes it illegal to allow any residue of cancer-causing chemicals in foods. Dr. Gross concluded by asking, given the cancer-causing potential of aspartame, which they now call amino sweet, and tell people that it's no more than two different amino vitamins, much like you find in milk, and is just as dangerous for you as milk. That's a lie, but stupid, stupid people, enormous bloated scumbag people who can't help it but believe it, and get worse and worse and worse. And it's the problem with today's society, is that you kind of have to be responsible for yourself in order to stop getting poisoned. Because not getting poisoned is actually a pretty difficult endeavor. Dr. Gross concluded by asking that, you know, we shouldn't have any tolerance for this kind of additives in our food, really. Should we? Okay? How could the FDA justify its position that it gives a certain amount of aspartame as constituting an allowable daily intake or safe level of it? Is that poison position, in fact, sorry, that must have been a Freudian slip. Is that position in effect not equivalent to setting a tolerance for this food additive and thus a violation of that law? And if the FDA itself elects to violate the law, who is left to protect the health of the public? The answer? The public, of course. The aspartame dumbed-down public is supposed to save themselves from aspartame. The FDA then revoked the petition for aspartame approval because it could not be proven safe and causes brain tumors. The FDA audit, known as the Bressler Report, details how Searle exercised brain tumors from rats, put them back in the study, and when they died, resurrected them on paper. Searle filtered out what they didn't want the FDA to see. And this is not by any means an isolated incident. And some people won't agree with me, and they're wrong. Aspartame was never safe, but it was marketed through the political chicanery of old Donny Rumsfeld. Dr. Jacqueline Verrett, another on-site FDA toxicologist, reported to Congress that all studies on aspartame should be thrown out, that they were built on a foundation of sand. Attorney Jim Turner in Sweet Misery, A Poison World, explains how it happened. And Dr. Jer Goyan, FDA commissioner, at the time, would have signed the revoking petition into law, and that would have closed the book on this deadly chemical toxin. And, of course, Goyan was fired at 3 a.m. the day after President Reagan took office. Reagan then appointed Arthur Hull Hayes as commissioner to overrule the Board of Inquiry. It just shows that, you know, it doesn't matter what president's in the White House, man. Seriously. And I can understand why people get fed up with politics, because it ain't politics that rules you, really. It's eugenics. Dr. Gross then asked for an indictment of the GD Searle company, but the defense team hired both U.S. prosecutors. Dr. John Olney, with Attorney James Turner, trying to prevent approval and had Searle do studies in his laboratory so he could oversee them. Because of the fraud discussed in the Bressler report, these studies showed brain damage. But Searle never gave that damning data to the FDA, of course. 2005, the Cancer Research Center at the European Foundation of Oncology and Environmental Sciences in Bologna, Italy, reported that a three-year study evaluating the potential carcinogenic effects of aspartame demonstrates that it, quote, induces an increase in lymphomas and leukemias in female rats. At that time, neurosurgeon Russell Blaycock, MD, announced that, quote, the new study released in the European Journal of Oncology by Miranda Soffritti and co-workers should terrify mothers and all those consuming aspartame sweetened products. This was a carefully done study, which carefully demonstrates a statistically significant increase in several types of lymphomas and leukemias in rats. Both of these malignancies have increased significantly in this country since the widespread use of aspartame. And I'm sure that it's not only that, it's quite cumulative. I mean, how many things are in our environment now that didn't used to be there back in, say, our parents' day? Well, you know, a little bit younger or something. There's so much more cancer-causing stuff around here in our daily life, in our diet, in our cars, etc., etc. Even if you want to save the planet and buy a hybrid car, the electromagnetic radiation off the electric engine gives you cancer. That'll teach you
how to save
the Earth.
We live in a totally poisoned world, and aspartame is just one of those things. You know, if you look at the components of it, what it breaks down into, it has wood alcohol or methanol. You know, in one of its branches, another one is phenylalanine, which people with PKU, mental disorder, can't digest, but it's dangerous for anyone really to overload on phenylalanine. It stresses the liver and kidneys and does all sorts of things and can cause chemical imbalances. Anyway. Totally dangerous stuff. Totally dangerous stuff. The first additive to be banned by the FDA, reapproved in 1981, after they changed around the directorship of the FDA. There was a lot of sleight of hand anyway. back in the day, I'm talking about 95, 96 here, Fox News, in fact, brought this up and went after a particular scientist who'd been working for the FDA and was part of the approval process. They went to his house, knocked on his door, and the old monster sort of opened the door up as far as the chain would allow and said, "Yeah, I don't want to, not available for interview," and sort of slammed the door on them. But see, Fox News actually did some journalism back then on this case. But since then, it's been long forgotten about. You know, there was plenty of ball games since, and it just falls out of the consciousness. It's just totally nuts now in New Zealand. They've banned sugar drinks. Everyone's, sugar drinks bad. Kids are running around. They're bouncing off the walls because of sugar. But they've allowed the Diet Cokes, Diet Pepsi, Diet Sprite to still be in schools because Mother Government says it's all good. God, I hate these scum. Like, I mean, seriously, we just have scum that run society and then a bunch of ordinary, meek, good people who follow them because that's the only truth. And then if you question their truth, well, you're a conspiracy theorist. But if I were to tell people that you should this is the whole thing. If I were to tell people that, you should really keep broccoli heads separate from other vegetables in your fridge because broccoli is high in ethylene, is a high ethylene content, and it's spoiled by being close to other vegetables. People are like, oh, that's interesting. And see, if you have general knowledge that's about things that don't conflict with the government, then you're a smart, interesting person. As soon as your information conflicts with something the government's told them, then you're a kook. It's funny that, isn't it?
Oh, it's brilliant.
And that's why I refer to them as scum so much, because they're not honest people, the majority of people.
Yeah, they're not interested either. You know, it's not surfing. It's not movies. It's not restaurateuring. It's not getting drunk. It's learning that we're doing in the main.
You think the thing is, most US university studies and British university studies showed a link between, a suspected link, any at least, in major universities between aspartame and cancer. One Japanese study was used in the Reagan administration in 1981 to improve the safety of aspartame. They took one Japanese study and ignored, you see, because they wanted to pick the study that suited their agenda. And they put in this guy, Arthur Hull Hayes. And there you go. And then in 2 years later, they further approved it for use in things other than dry goods, such as carbonated drinks and things over 32 degrees Fahrenheit. It becomes more unstable. So the actual the wood alcohol component of it becomes more easily broken down. So your kids are chewing on wood alcohol. You know, and that's not even the cancer component of it.
It's just unbelievable. Yeah.
And then it's owned by Monsanto, of course.
Incidentally, Monsanto has now bought Blackwater.
Oh, yeah. Well, people need to start going up to Monsanto now. If you can look up in the book and find your local Monsanto representatives, get as much guff on them as possible, and then go hold them to the fire. Go make their lives difficult. They're making our lives difficult. Go make their lives difficult in a lawful, logical, documented way. Go do it. Why not? It's our freedom. While you still can.
Yeah, man, and you just got to remember, be very nice to them, just call them scum, and they're evil eugenic killers, okay?
Put a camera in the face, tell them to shut up and listen to you, otherwise you're going to blow them all out over YouTube, and you're going to ruin their lives. I mean, this is the way you got to approach these people. You got to threaten them with exposure, you know, not with death or anything, but just threaten them with exposure, tell them they better well listen to you, or you're going to start writing letters and causing damage to their company, causing thousands of dollars worth in the day if they don't just listen to you. How about that?
They love PR.
We've got to take the bull by the horns. Is Barack Obama and his henchmen from Goldman Sachs, are they going to go to Monsanto and say, hey, you really should back off on these, you know, these diet drinks and the way you're fattening America? And are they going to do that?
Oh, and incidentally, that's another element that people don't know about aspartame, is it makes you crave sugar. Because I think it's something like your body tastes the sweetness, okay? But because there ain't any actual sweetness for your body to go after, your body then craves real sugar as a result. So if you're drinking Diet Coke in order to save yourself from gaining weight, just bear in mind that it's going to be a heck of a lot harder to resist anything that is going to make you gain it anyway. But even if aspartame did work, it still gives you cancer, which technically, if you count a dead person as not weighing anything, certainly helps you decrease your weight.
but here's the punchline, Vinny. Here it is for all the skeptics out there. This is a fact. Most of the methanol that your body takes in your small intestine, converts to formaldehyde. Formaldehyde, folks. You know what I mean? Formaldehyde, it's just like they have to use the worst toxins on us, the fluoride, formaldehyde, mercury, you name it. That's when they're not irradiating you. Formaldehyde. And then they say the toxicity levels are not high enough to be toxic. Look, folks, they just say it's not so many parts per million, so it doesn't matter. It does. It does. It's an unmeasured dose. You could drink 10 cans, you could do a Glenn Beck on everyone and do 20 cans of Diet Coke a day. It's just like fluoride. It's an uncontrolled dosage. It's formaldehyde and going into little kids' heads. It's terrible.
Oh, it's the lighter side of genocide, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show with Will, and we'll be right back. The light, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And, Will, you're talking about this thing on Kazakhstan, the seat of Satan, coming in from Vigilant Citizen. Incredible building structures here, man. They look like... Oh, what did you say? Enormous gold towers.
Well, what they are is Boaz and Yakin. They are the pillars of illuminated Freemasonry. But anyway, to give people a forward, Astana is in the geographical center of Kazakhstan. And... This whole city has basically been rebuilt in this weird occult vision, and you just can't make this up. I look at DC and Westminster You know, Rothschild owned London, and Rothschild owned Washington.
On this Rothschild-owned planet.
What do you mean? Those are truly sovereign states. You know, the DC is a military arm, London is a finance capital, and the ecclesiastical center is, you know, those scum down there in Italy, in Rome. Yeah. And these are all sovereign states. They're not actually part of their independent nations. But people don't know that. Westminster in central London, the city of London, has its own police force, Rothschild Police. They're separate from – they have a different they have canon law as opposed to, you know, all this other stuff too. But anyway, in Astana, they've made this whole New World Order city, and it surpasses all of them. I mean, there is nothing like this on the planet. There is no other place with this higher concentration. I challenge anyone to find another place with a higher concentration of occult symbols, references, all just newly built. They've just thrown up these pyramids. They've made this this underground opera house with a huge Rosicrucian emblem, a black sun type thing occupying the ceiling, like a massive auditorium. They've made the sun table where supposedly there'll be UN meetings. People from all around the world meet at this. Once again, everything's on a huge scale. They have pyramid buildings all over town, the pillars, Solomon's pillars as you come in, eternal flame lantern type structures. One of the weirdest things that's been dubbed the total recall thing is there is a tower where people can view over the entire city, and inside this globe-shaped tower is a golden triangle upon a tabletop that has Kazakhstan's president's handprint in it, just like that. There's a weird hand thing in the Total Recall movie where Arnie had to arrange his fingers in a cluster of, well, put two together. He had to arrange his fingers on this alien table thing and push down upon it, and, you know, and unlocked the gates of hell or something. They've got this triangle.
That was the one on Total Recall when he's just about to turn on the machine that transforms the atmosphere of Mars by pushing these huge hot rods into the water or something. Is that what you're talking about, Will?
Yep. And they've got one of these tables anyway in Kazakhstan, in central view. Everything just lines up. So that's in the middle of these two pillars as you go into this open-air temple, which is Astana. And anyway, everything is just totally symmetric and symbolic. You have to view it. You have to see this place. If you're interested in a occult symbology, or even if you're not and you want to see what the hell we're raving about, yeah, Vigilant Citizen do a really good job. It's vigilantcitizen.com. If you put an Astana on their website, you will see they've got even got a video on it. Amazing stuff.
Hey,
the conspiracy in stone, if you will, for the deniers out there.
Hey, and it's interesting to me how people can really deny it because it is everywhere. Right. And I think it's more the fact that people refuse to look rather than the fact that it's not there. You know what I'm saying? Well, people don't want to deal with it because it is, it's fantastic. Frankly, it sounds insane. Okay. And so people just instantly switch off and not realizing, of course, that by switching off, that is an insane reaction.
I mean, yeah. I mean, there's boy, the comments underneath this article just amaze me once again. Humanity frustrates me so much. One person says, "This is the stupidest, most ignorant, and ill-informed piece of nonsense I've ever seen. Pull your heads out your behinds and look around you. The world has real problems, not this, oh my God, Illuminati crap." You know, so the world has real problems. Oh, yeah. Don't worry about who's causing them, though. You just deal with all those problems, pal. So here's this giant waterfall coming down. And Mr. Problem Solver here, he just wants to bail it out with a little ice cream container. But then we're looking at the problems going, hey, they all have common threads in them. There's common people involved. There's secret societies involved. There's, you know, our human mind, whether you believe in evolution or not, is trained to see patterns that puts us above, you know, above certain other species in the animal kingdom, so that we can see patterns and therefore have a better chance of survival. But some monkeys out there, they just want to ignore that and say, oh, that part of the human brain is a weakness, seeing patterns and order in things, that's conspiratorial. We need to put that aside and just deal like everything's a random sporadic occurrence, and so we can get rolled by some systematic program that we don't understand.
That's got,
you know, and they don't understand that we have innate instincts for a reason, and that's why we survive for a reason. And if you ignore those, that's why we're going to die, once again, for a reason. That's why that guy's dead. That's why him and his family are dead. I mean, it's a sad thing, but they're never going to have the discernment to survive. Even people with the discernment are probably not going to survive because of all these ignorant people. It's totally, they're ignoring their own instincts. That's the saddest thing. They've been trained out of them.
Hey, how long does it take to train a human being to forget their instincts? Apparently, it doesn't take very long.
5 years, maybe?
I mean, if reality changed suddenly and everything was for the worse, I'm not saying that it isn't already, but... But if everything that you know became, destroyed, how long would it take you to forget how everything was going? I mean, I can't even remember what kind of a person I was a couple of years ago, you know, because I changed so much. It makes me wonder who I am anymore. And perhaps this is something that society is going through as well. We're struggling to find out who it is we actually want to be and who we are, and at the same time worrying about how everything is working. It's almost too much for a lot of people, especially those who've got day jobs and kids, things like this that distract a lot of your attention. You can't see the forest for the trees, so to speak.
That heightens the responsibility. If you have children, you know, if you have all these things levered upon your life, say you've invested thousands upon thousands of hours in your house, as most people have, by way of working to service a loan to some scumbag central bank, yeah, wouldn't you then want to put in a couple of hours a week in order to defend it? And so if right now the UN or whoever threatens our sovereignty, and if our country is currently just a corporate vessel of a foreign bank, and we're just loan servicing units upon huge foreign debt, then wouldn't you want to ensure somehow that everything you've invested in, your family, your friends even, your household, is somehow secure from the threat of globalists? Well, no. Everyone's just like, oh, well, what I need to do is pay the government and everything's just fine. Some people even argue with me. They go, oh, you don't understand. The Illuminati and all these guys, they're a positive force on the earth. And I get new agers telling me that all the time. It's just like, hey, man, just don't worry about things. Your negative energy is feeding into it. Just don't worry about it. There are good people. There are good people in the UN. There are good people in the Illuminati. And they're working towards something that you don't quite understand. And, you know, you just have to trust in them. I say, yeah, you look how they kill children innocently. Look how 70,000 children gone missing in China this year. Look at look at things like aspartame. The Illuminati are so good. Yeah? Why do they want to put formaldehyde in your body? You know? There's thousands of measures. There's thousands of arguments for you know, making the case as to why the elite are not a positive force on the earth and why they're actually not good people, categorically.
But there's only occasion, you know, the good thing that the elite do, you know, by... No, actually, I can't think of a single example of something that the elite's done that's good. Really?
Well, I can. I mean, you know, they invented the light bulb and cars and certain things that have made our lives richer in certain ways. You know, they've also have side effects, but, you know, I'm not saying they're totally useless, but
I would think that any of the positive aspects that the elite throw out at you are negative aspects, because they devote you instead to things that aren't real. I mean, the elite didn't give you your family. The elite didn't, you know, birth you. So your life itself doesn't belong to them, but they think it does, right? They didn't give you life, but because they designed your society, they think that because you live in it, that you're their property. And
well, they
any
can
of
regulate
these,
your birth.
Yeah, so yeah. That's true as well. Now, but it doesn't mean you should be appreciative that they didn't actually manage to regulate you out of existence. You know, I mean, that's relativism to a T, bro.
And, I know. But the thing is, that's the thing, though. That's what most people are. And so in China, where they have a one-child policy, for instance, a lot of people see it that the government has allowed them to exist. You see, they see it in a backward manner. I say government's got nothing to do with my life, my heart beating, and our survival. But a lot of people don't see it that way. They see it as their rights coming from government. Yeah.
And they're not terribly bright, really, are they? Because government always throughout history just takes away your rights. They don't want you to have rights because it means they can't control you. And the irony is that governments don't even control themselves. Okay, they're all under the throw of the frickin' NWO, bro.
And the worst part about that is a whole bunch of slaves go out there and go, "I hate the people who know their rights. I hate those people who argue with the system. Why can't they just shut up and put their heads down like the rest of us?" Well, because putting your head down, pal, historically has shown not to get anywhere, just gets more tyranny. You know how much? Yeah. But they don't know history, so it has to happen to them. They have to wait till the UN comes and shoots up their family. You know, and then maybe, you know, maybe they'll get off the couch then. You know, that has to happen to them. Then just, you know, they'll just keep taking it. Oh, there's drones flying over us, surveilling us. Oh, that's okay. You know, they're just after those terrorists. And, oh, you know, they're putting this and that in the water. That's okay. It's looking after my teeth. It's just nothing they won't take.
And maybe that's a testament to the training of the New World Order here, Will. Maybe they've become such effective dog trainers that everybody else just wants to be their pet. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Be right back.
Driving and I won't stop, and it feels so good to be alive and on top. My reach is global, my tower secure, my cause is noble, my power is pure. I can hand out a million vaccinations, or let them all die in exasperation. Have them all healed from the lacerations, have them all killed by assassination. I can make anybody go to prison just because I don't like them, and I can do anything with no permission. I have it all under my command because I can guide a missile by satellite, by satellite, by satellite. And I can hit a target through a telescope, through a telescope, through a telescope. And I can end the planet in a holocaust, 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 in a holocaust.
I ride my bike with no handlebars, no handlebars.
And welcome back. And welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And incidentally, the Vinnie Eastwood Show com. We've got some interesting articles, of course, as always, to read out. But what I'm kind of concerned about is, you know, the EU backing meat and milk from cloned animals. This is in from the Daily Mail. The sale of meat and milk from offspring of cloned farm animals is set to be backed by EU commissioners despite mass consumer opposition. A huge majority of the public is against clone animal farming, according to studies in Britain and across Europe. Concerns surrounding the ethics of the process, the welfare of the animals, and a lack of research on food safety. However, a leaked report to be discussed by the EU College of Commissioners today comes out in favour of food from the offspring of clones. Alarmingly, it appears this food would not have to be labelled, leaving families completely in the dark about what they are putting in their mouths. Specifically, the report proposes a temporary 5-year ban on the sale of meat and milk from clones, but there would be no ban on food from their offspring. And of course, later on, they'll say, oh, wait, hold on a second, it's not that bad after all, let's just keep it all legal, you know, let's just... if this policy is adopted, European farms could be populated by cloned supersized animals used as breeding stock for cows, pigs, and sheep that are reared for food. Clones themselves can suffer a range of painful conditions, including malformed organs and gigantism. One of the largest types of ism. Many die in the womb or soon after birth. Figured nature's trying to tell you something. But the commission and the government take the view that meat and milk from the offspring of a clone is effectively normal, and therefore no ban or labelling is required. The Daily Mail revealed in the summer that more than 100 cattle, pedigree Holstein milking cows, which are the offspring of clones, are being raised on British farms. We also revealed how meat from 2 clone offspring bulls and 1 veal calf had been sold in butcher shops in Scotland, Northeast England, London and Belgium. The Food Standards Authority has made it clear that it believes it is illegal to sell meat and milk from these sources without first getting its approval. Food and Farming Minister Carolyn Spellman supports the move to force meat and milk from clone offspring into supermarkets. The idea that the European Commission and the government are putting the interests of high-tech clone farmers over the concerns of consumers and animal welfare has angered critics. Now, what's in your shopping bag? Daily Mail revealed how meat from 2 clone offspring bulls and 1 veal calf have been sold in the butcher shops in London, Northeast England, you know, Belgium, Scotland, all right. But the attitude has echoes of the BSE crisis and the way biotech farms tried to force GM food into the national diet. A 2008 study found consumers across Europe are unhappy at this new era of Frankenstein food farming. 87% of Britons said too little is known about the long-term health and safety effects of eating food from these animals. 87%! What does the EU do? Oh, it's not a problem!
Isn't this so hypocritical, Vinny? When the whole world elite are so concerned over 0.1 of a degree Celsius or whatever they're getting their heads in the twist about, and then you know, so they pretend to be all for nature, and then they go out cloning things. You know, like are these the same people? Are they totally schizophrenic? No, they're just trying to please all sides. You know what I mean? Please the leftists with the climate change one. Please the rightists with the war on terror. Please the technocrats with cloning.
Well, they're playing the left and the right off against each other, you know, and this is what people don't get, is that the left and the right are too dumb in the main. I don't want to offend anybody who's on the left or on the right, but whatever you believe in, it's a false paradigm, okay? It doesn't exist. Like Will said on, what was it, our Afghanistan protest video, we were out at a what was it called? Out of some SAS base, protesting the fact that they're sending our special forces off to fight in Afghanistan. And Will said something that I thought was very interesting, was that it doesn't exist, okay? The left blames the corporations and the right blames big government. But the corporations own the government. So the only thing that you're doing by restricting government is giving the corporations a bigger tool to come out after you.
Yeah. And that's what we see with Monsanto buying everything out and all this cloning technology and GM tech and...
More on Santo.
All we're saying is what fits the evidence. We're not making, you know, people think we sit back and let's make up another conspiracy theory today. Oh, you know, it just happens that way. We don't have to make anything up here. It's as crazy than I can even imagine. I don't have to be like some sci-fi writer. I'm not a very creative person.
Hey, we'd have to be pretty creative to come up with all of this stuff, don't you think, Will? We'd have to be the...
Or just watch... Arnold Schwarzenegger movie... I think we passed the ads here, Vinny.
Yeah, we're past the ads, all right. You know, the ads have been long gone, bro. Welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Incidentally, AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And we've been plowing through some old-fashioned scamming information over here. This article came out a wee while ago, but I think it's relevant considering yesterday's show. Police tell us CCTV success reduces crime in Newmarket. And those of you who are unaware, with Newmarket, it's one of the nice shopping vistas of Auckland City in New Zealand. The leading retail district, Newmarket, has again experienced a notable fall in overall reported crime in the year... Oh, I'm sorry. In the year to 30th of April 2010, police are now telling other areas to take a closer look at Newmarket's overwhelming success with its CCTV camera. And Newmarket's officer in charge, Senior Sergeant Wendy Spiller, says Newmarket Central Business District continues to buck the trend in challenging economic times. Quote, CBD Newmarket's overall crime statistics have only decreased in the past 2 years. There's been a great effort by the police, the public, the business community and Newmarket Security. We are grateful to the continued support and partnership with the Newmarket Business Association. We encourage other areas to consider adopting a similar model, which is proving to be very worthwhile. Now, have a look at this. The amount of people that she actually names here as beneficiaries of this is quite spectacular. All right? And yet, the police come out and say, oh, it's just the CCTV cameras. Aren't they great? You know, it's all total BS. All right? This Ms. Spiller, I can imagine there's a reason for that, why anybody would want to stay married to her, God knows. Says their police station's own assessments show overall reported crime in key categories down by 25% in central Newmarket on the previous year. This includes falls in reported burglaries, stolen cars, violence offences, drug offences, and disorder. Theft from vehicles is the only category that hasn't dropped, but Ms. Spiller says that is consistent with Auckland City Police District citywide statistics for theft ex vehicles. Mr. Brewer says Newmarket's state-of-the-art CCTV camera network funded and launched by the Business Association in 2008 is without doubt proving its worth. Without doubt. I wonder how many control groups they had. I wonder how many double-blind tests they had. I wonder how many people they interviewed. I wonder how many crimes they actually solved with the CCTVs instead of just saying, oh, crime went down. Must have been the CCTVs, even though we didn't use them at all.
Yeah.
It's madness. You know, and people actually still believe this, that CCTVs make a difference. Coming up after the break, we're going to have Tim Selwyn from Tumeke. Tumeke.blogspot.com. Back in a moment.
We got to change the way we see the problem if we're gonna fix this place. My living soul don't care about the color of your face. Unite and go respect our right to live here on the land. It's Tino Ranga, Tina Tonga, we don't own the banks. The parliament does so, so where do you rather stand? They paying their bills off your back with hefty tax demands. Misleading our youth with alcohol, TV, contrabands. So kids act up and disturb our community. Uninformed public then consents to our planned absurdity. What?
We replace oh, yeah.
our human rights with commercial slavery. They print a hundred buck and loan it to you.
Welcome back. Alone, but don't print the interest, so they'll never. Anybody else out there enjoy being a slave? I do. And in a complete opposite spirit, I have, as we always have, on the show every week, Tim Selwyn from Tumeke. Tumeke.
Hey, Vinny, how are you going?
G'day, Tim. Always a pleasure to have you on the show today, bro. And apparently we've swapped teams here. You're having coffee and I'm not this morning.
Yeah, well, that's why I interrupted my own plug, because I've been having this coffee, Vinny. It's great. It's great. It's great stuff, this coffee. Don't know whether
I can nip it. It's great.
Helps with about three teaspoons of sugar in there. Yeah, it's great.
Oh, yeah. As long as it's not aspartame. Now, what's been going on in the country this week, Tim?
Well, there's been a fair bit happening. I think the major issue, you might disagree with me, Vinny, I'm not sure, was actually a very banal grey chap called Phil Goff, and he happens to run, just by coincidence, basically, and by inheritance, the major opposition party, the Labour Party, that he happened to fall upon when the former leader, who was the Prime Minister at the time, went off to New York, to the United Nations, to try to basically apply for the job of Secretary General. But she's got to get through the stint as the UN Development Agency's head of the program there before she gets to take over from Ban Ki-moon. But anyway, her successor for the Labour Party, Phil Goff, made a what people are calling potentially a breakthrough speech over the weekend at the Labour Party conference, which has basically had people saying that maybe for, I don't know, in the last 15 years or something, we might actually have a proper left-wing alternative to government and to the opposition party. That he's actually taken it from a centre ground that has accepted the neoliberal market ideology that he in fact headed as or was part of during the 1980s when the Labor Party was in government, and he's basically signalled at least that they are turning that very big, vast, heavy ship around, and that maybe they will become what we would traditionally call what they used to be, a left-wing party. And this is something quite new that we've never really had before, because we've always been fighting between Tweedledum and Tweedledee, both of them going towards the so-called centre vote of middle redneck New Zealand. But essentially they're all espousing the same thing, which is free trade agreements, massive foreign, they call it investment, but really it's ownership slash takeover of New Zealand assets. That they both have had very right-wing conservative policies, I'd say, Vinny, to do with law and order, locking people up, throwing away the key, becoming harsher and harsher, and also contracting out and so-called public-private partnerships. These have all been the consensus politics that this Phil Goff guy, basically, in the 1980s had set up, and the National Party that is now in government has continued on. But at the weekend, Vinny, I don't know if you were there, I don't know if you heard the speech or whatever, but it sounds as though Phil Goff and the Labor Party are actually going to be left-wing, and we've actually got an alternative. Now it's going to be right-wing versus left-wing rather than just right-wing versus the other version of right-wing. Vinny, were you there? Do you hear any
of we've never had right-wing, Tim, so this is going to make a good debate. We've never had right-wing, and how is a right-wing to lock up people and throw them away? How is that conservative? I really want to know that.
Well, conservative people, I would say, are stand for harsh, retributive sorts of punishment, and the opposite of conservative is liberal slash radical, and they stand for alternatives that are not harsh and harking back to the old days, where indeed, if you owed someone even £1 or whatever, they could basically have you locked in jail. I mean, that's punitive, you know what I mean? I mean, and we've gone a long way from there. So I'm saying basically they are people who hark back to the days of the past. Some would argue they actually hark back beyond the Victorian era to the medieval era, if you've heard what some right-wingers like David Garrett, formerly of the ACT Party, which is a party to the right of the governing National Party in coalition with them, what they've got to say, they are just going more and more to harsher and harsher forms of punishment, but on lesser and lesser crimes, basically.
I think the fact that...
I know you're going to disagree, Will. I know you're not.
I am going to disagree. I think the fact that people who espouse themselves as right-wing tend towards wanting to lock everyone up and whip them 20 times and smash their heads in and stuff, they might tend that way. That doesn't mean that that's the theory of conservatism. You could have 100% of conservatives act that way. That still wouldn't mean that that's what it means to be conservative. These are neocons. These are people founded by Trotskyites.
Maybe I'm losing the term conservative a bit loose, but I say right-wing slash conservative. I mean, it's a conservative.
No libertarian wants to see someone beaten to pulp for breaking a speeding, you know, for a traffic violation. I don't know, but I think what's a true left wing? Getting back to your previous point about Phil Goff,
How credible is his turnaround? I mean, we had left wing commentators before the before this conference speech saying that, and there's an election next year, by the way, so it is important and it does signal what their actual policy platform will be for the election going up against National. But what these left-wing commentators are saying, well, you've got to atone some way, Mr. Goff, for the so-called radical right-wing neoliberal, neoconservative, if you will, even policies that you were implementing all the way through the 90s, 80s when you were cabinet minister. I mean, this is a guy who introduced student fees on universities in his last year in office there in the 1990, but without introducing loans. You know what I mean? They criticised the National Party for introducing the student loan system, but Phil Goff arguably is even worse because he introduced the fees that you have to pay, but without giving him an option of how to pay it. At least right, the so party gave them the love.
I'm going to quote Vinny from yesterday here, and Vinny made a good point, and he said they, worse the effect of anyway, they shovel the crap on you and then let you decide what sort of what smell you want, what aroma you want, what taste you want, what flavor you want. And but they don't ask if you want the crap shoveled on you in the first place. And
you're right. I accept
and that's
that.
The
I
whole premise. Well, so arguing over student loans is one of those, to me, is one of those false debates.
It's part of the evidence of the shape of the turd, if you know what I mean. And maybe Phil Goff, in that respect, is now a dried up white dog turd. The lawn about to be blown away in this election.
I have
came up with all of these policies during the 80s, all the way through the 90s. He went off and signed the free trade agreement with China, for heaven's sakes, and in the last previous term. And now he's turning around saying, "Well, hallelujah, brothers, I've discovered the light, socialism forever." You know what I mean?
It's ridiculous, Tim. I mean, a leopard does not change its spots. And you know what his speech reminded me of? It reminded me of Barack H. O. Barry, the Hopi, the Changey, we're going to stop illegal wiretapping, we're going to stop lobbyists, we're going to do this and that and the other. And what does he do once he gets into power? The direct opposite of everything he said. Same agenda continues. I will not be fooled by Phil Goff, okay? I have interviewed him about the Super City. I asked him specifically whether or not he was going to give any of the Aucklanders a vote. He dodged the question. Therefore, he's dodgy. Therefore, cannot trust him. I will never vote for him, okay? There's nothing against necessarily Phil Goff. It's just that he's a scumbag, slime, who's working for a false party, all right? Labour Party, National Party, both false parties. They are still the Tweedledee and still the Tweedledum. But they've realised that everybody's really ticked off with the false choice that they've been given, so they're going to give them another false choice that's even falser than the first one. So false, in fact, that one would never believe that they're being scammed so horrifically, just like old Barack H.O. Barry took the American people for a ride and is now in the pawn, basically operating as a massive pawn of bankers. The same thing's going to happen. My feeling is that because the National Party has become so they've done worse than any government I've ever seen, or any government that I've ever lived through, arguably. And as a result, people are going to rush for the Labour Party, who set up National to do all these things, of course, to save them. All right? It's a huge one-step, two-step, three-step scam, okay? People shouldn't be suckers anymore, Tim.
How does having a pure left-wing true government, even if the guy is true to his word, Vinny, let's give him the benefit of the huge doubt.
No.
And he's going to run, run a left-wing government now. I mean, that does nothing for – that just makes me even more concerned that we're going to have a total socialist takeover.
Yeah, I mean, Phil's a nice guy. Everyone sees this. Phil's a nice guy. I know him as well, and not just through politics. And yeah, he's a nice guy, but the question still remains. And this is what these left-wing commentators are saying. You've got to atone for these so-called ideological sins of the past, right? Because that's the huge line of baggage that Mr. Goff is on, going round and round in the carousel of the ideological airport here. We're seeing the same things again and again, and now he's giving a different message, saying, well, maybe we'll tinker with things at the side here, and that, it's all changed now. But how realistic is it? Because he didn't give an explanation of why they are changing, and he made no reference to the past in which he is inextricably involved. And so it's very easy now for the National Party. And he needed to make that explanation. And he could have done it in that speech, which I thought was a very good speech, by the way. If you read it, it's very good. How he said it, however, probably wasn't as good, because it was a Barack Obama-style speech. Now, Obama's line was, yes, we can. And in this speech, Phil was saying something like, we can do it, or something. And he repeated it over and over again. I know, it was so sad. It was so sad. What I would have liked to have seen, instead of this Obama-esque rhetoric, which I think it falls rather flat in a New Zealand context, especially when delivered by a grey cardigan-wearing type chap like Phil Goff, is exactly why. Just a few instances of why they're changing course and why they are now being left-wing instead of being pro-market, basically right-wing stooge government that they were for so many years. All he had to do in the...
Can you explain this to me? I really don't get it.
It's a class-based thing, basically. I'm not saying liberal here. I'm saying left, which is of and for the working classes. Basically, that means things like so-called progressive taxation. That means the state assisting the lower income people and not assisting so much the higher income people. It's as basic as that. That's my definition.
We have that already, though. We have a graduated taxation model,
Yes, but under this national government, it's getting less and less so. I mean, when the national government had their tax breaks, they didn't just lop it all on the bottom bit so that everyone received that amount. They lopped big chunks off the very top of the grade so that the wealthy people received a huge big whack.
I haven't got the stats in front of me, but I'm not defending the elite, but I know that in the United States, the top 5% also pay about 98% of the tax, because 38% taxation on $1 million plus is a lot more than 20% on $30,000. As a total figure, the wealthy actually pay the majority of the tax.
Well, that's a right wing argument, isn't it, Will?
Hold on. Well, what we're talking about there is percentages, okay? But, the person that we had on the other day, Fred Stewart, he said that the business is not about percentages, it's about people. So it doesn't matter what percentage the wealthiest pay, as long as they're actually really not being scammed.
90% of people in the schooling system, 90% of people who went to the concentration camps were killed. It's a percentage that matters. All I'm saying is, if you want to say who actually pays the majority of tax, a fact argument is that over 90% of tax is paid by less than 5% of the population, the highest 5%.
Yeah, but the fact is that 98% of the taxes or whatever paid by 2% or whatever your figure is, the fact is that you could lop a whole lot off them, but the poorest person still can't afford that, extra hour of the heater being on. Whereas if you gave that, and this is what the National Party in this country have done, and probably I think what the Bush tax cuts that are expiring also did in the case of the US, is that they give the very wealthy person that extra ability to have, say, install an extra spa pool or something. And as economic efficiency and fairness goes, it's not...
Who provides the jobs in an economy? How does a working class become a working class? And for all those socialists out there who say the workers united and all this sort of crap, all the workers' parties, how do workers become workers? By wealthy people, they depend upon the elites they're supposedly against. By wealthy people,
well, they can't
having
borrow
the capital to invest in production and have factories and slaves to work in.
And a lot of the working class are locked out of that capital system because wealthy people loan and trust other wealthy people with those resources and the money, basically. And it's a very tight circle that it's kept in. It's very difficult to break through. It's not just a matter of having your wits about you and going out into the bold world. As we all know, it's a lot more difficult than that. And all I'm saying, Will, basically, and I am contesting it, I suppose, what you're saying, is that all I'm saying is that what Phil Goff has signalled is that it is more of a traditionally left-wing, i.e. pro-worker, pro-low-income policies than they were previously. And I think it's hard to deny, but as I'm saying, and I guess as Vinny has said as well, and you have said, Will, is that can we trust them? Because without that explanation of why you're changing the policy, the fact that they've changed it, I don't think means that much. And it's all very well having your Obama-esque rhetoric. I'm sorry, I don't have the line here because he was repeating it, but it was so obviously Obama. He's trying to be this Obama. Well, and obviously Phil Goff is the opposite of Obama.
Well, like everything I try and do, I'm trying to question the premise, and I don't think the premise is good for the workers. I think the free market model is the best for everyone. But we can continue this debate after the break.
You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will. Our special guest is Tim Selwyn from Tuukamekia, and we'll be right back after the break. Thanks, Bob. Welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will. And our special guest is Tim Selwyn from Tuukamekia.blogspot.com. That's Tuukamekia.blogspot.com. I suggest you check it out if you know what's good for you. Tim, welcome back.
Thanks for the plug, Vinnie. We were talking about Phil Goff before, and that's just driven you mad because the guy, obviously you don't trust the leader of the opposition, and I think there are serious questions there because he never explained himself properly about why he's doing what he's doing. That maybe it is all just an election gimmick, and that the left would turn and the ability to offer something that is different from the National Party just isn't going to transpire at the election, and I think I get the feeling those bloody Tories are going to be elected anyway.
Yeah,
How about this, Tim? Here's an idea. Imagine there were a flat rate of tax. I don't know, we kicked the central bankers out or something, didn't have to pay them exorbitant interest rates, and we had a flat rate of, say, 10%. And we couldn't grow government, as all the left want, but we just had a flat rate of 10%. The millionaire who's earning $1 million is paying 100 grand. The guy who's earning 30,000 is paying 3,000. Okay? It's 10% for everyone. Now, what's wrong with that?
Well, it sounds a bit like what they do in Hong Kong. And they have a system that works quite well for some people there, but they also have a very low effective minimum wage as compared with the so-called Western first world countries. That's potentially what will happen if there is a large population. That's one of the problems.
But New Zealand doesn't have that population concern as of yet anyway.
Yeah, but there are issues there. Of course, Roger Douglas, the former finance minister, and Phil Goff was a follower of his. We call them Roger Gnomes. And they were proposing a flat tax in, I think it was 1988, and it was a very radical measure at the time. There were the business community obviously was very much in favour of it. Theoretically, a lot of people were in favour of it because there are certain efficiencies that come from just having one tax band. You could sack probably half of the Inland Revenue Department. There's a lot of tax avoidance that doesn't go on, so you could probably sack a great deal of the accountants. I mean, these are very appealing notions to redistribute the work in society away from these bean counters into something productive. And exactly. So it had great appeal. And in 1989, when there was a contest, Phil Goff was, of course, in the cabinet at the time, between the Prime Minister David Longey, a very populist guy. He was having a great ideological battle with so-called right-wing Roger Douglas there as finance minister. For a short period there in 1989, Roger Douglas, who is now actually part of the ACT Party and is back in Parliament, he was about 10% or so in the 10-12% most preferred prime minister at the time. So that was your age, Will. You should have been back then leading what they called the Backbone Club, which was the pro-Roger Douglas faction that wanted to introduce very radical measures. Very radical
measures. They didn't want to kick out the central banks, though. That's long after the IMF owned this place. No, I'm
right,
more radical.
Not that bad.
I just think if you make it easier for business, you, in the long run, you make it easier for ordinary people. I could be wrong. I think left-wing government tends towards more bean counters, more middlemen, more inefficiencies in the system, more government regulation, which invariably leads to inefficiencies. The more you regulate an economy, the less fluid it can move and fluctuate, especially when it comes to trying to compete with international competitors on a on the stock market, for instance. So,
well, I think the economy is false in the first place, and if true right-wingism was to win through, or true left-wingism, you basically the only thing that is impediment to it, really, is just the New World Order, the international private banksters who own all of our countries, and
I'm saying kick them out. But then after we kick them out, if we were to kick them out, I'm saying what would be the best system in theory? And I don't think it's pay 100% of your wages to the government and let them do shopping for you. I think it's pay 0% and run your own life. And the people who can't run their own life, they die, as nature would intend, and the other people get to flourish. I mean, I'm sorry if that sounds mean, but that's the way I think society should be run. And then if someone wants to bludge, it doesn't affect me. So right now I have fake neocon relatives who go, oh, there's people in Otara, they're taking my taxes, and only because we have a social system. Hey, if you made an independent sort of society that empowered individuals who are entrepreneurial, then we wouldn't have this dependence. And if someone wanted to go off to Great Barrier and spend the rest of their life surfing, they could, and it wouldn't affect me, and we would be no excuse to moan about bludges because it wouldn't have any effect on you. But in this integrated social system, it does. And it gives people things to moan about that aren't really effective.
Yeah, the other thing with the left-wing parties is, unfortunately, they've also got an incentive to create a dependency upon the state transfers, one way or the other. And that's the unfortunate thing. But it's also echoed on the right-wing side, I would say, by also a form of state dependency, like akin to corporate welfare, that exists in many different levels. I mean, it's a classic case always, as a solid rule, and this is how you define left and right here in New Zealand at least, is that as soon as the Labour Party get in, they will cut the spending that the government's giving to private, reduce the amount given to private schools. And they will do something to increase the PPTA, the teachers' union salaries and so forth. And as soon as the national government get in, the right-wingers, they will do the exact opposite. They will suddenly find an excuse, as they are now, to try to cut back on the so-called left-wing teachers' unions in the state sector, and then they will dollop out large amounts of cash to the private schools. And this is how it goes each time. You know, one ideological faction actually creating a system of dependency upon each other, but not just because the bludging, I think, goes both ways. It does go both ways, and unless you're prepared to have that purist sort of libertarian government that arguably only exists...
Well, I just say take their tools away from them, take the money away from them. Limit it highly anyway. I believe in well-regulated government. If they were getting a sixth of the tax revenue they currently get, we would have a sixth of the problems we currently have. I mean,
it depends how it's spent too, doesn't it? It does depend how it's spent. And unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you think about it, in a democratic system, one man, one vote, everyone's vote counts equally. Everyone's hands is in everyone else's pockets, mate. And
but if we had a constitution, a binding constitution.
Well, we don't have a constitution.
If we don't, that's what we need to have, though. And then regardless of who was elected, who the slaves voted for, if they voted wrong, right, whatever they voted, up, down, left, right, there would be a binding constitution whereby if the government starts breaking it, then people like Penny Bright and civil watchdogs can start taking them to the cleaners. In the United States, Barack Obama, just his name is a violation of the Constitution, just his being is a violation of the Constitution. Born outside the United States, his real name's Barry Satoru, and the guy's a fraudster. And he won't take me to court for saying that on public American radio because he's a fraudster. And so where you have people who don't even know their own constitution, then you have the same effect of not having one as in New Zealand.
Well, exactly. We don't really have a constitution to hold people's feet to the fire anyway, and the judiciary is all, well, politically picked. I mean, we don't have any elected judiciary here, for example, unlike in the States. You know, we just don't have that. We don't have that system, and we don't have that history. And although similarly with America, you know, with the Democrats and the Republicans, they're awfully similar in the same way, I suppose, replicated all over the Western world. These parties are so similar, and so I guess, you know, we keep coming back to, well, in whose interests are these parties being run, and in whose interest is the government being run?
Because that's it doesn't why I don't seem vote, to be... I don't vote for right-wing or left-wing parties. You know what I mean? I just don't vote.
Well, some people have given up because it's not a rational decision anymore. I mean, the choice in the local mayoral election here between everyone pretending to be independent when we know perfectly well that they're not just ideologically aligned but party political aligned, and they're pretending to be independent. Now we've got a supposedly independent person who's a Labor Party guy, and the guy who lost was a supposedly independent, but we all know, National Party guy.
We're all biased, aren't we? We're all leaning some direction, so...
Yeah,
we have to be.
And you know what the interesting thing is? We're all leaning towards fraud. Because, you know, just by giving the government any creds whatsoever, any street credit or any kudos that you could ever conceivably give to the governments of our day, you know, whether they be in the United States or England or New Zealand, okay, they're all based on fraud. So why are we having this pretend debate, Tim? I mean... All I'm saying is that
for the first time, it actually looks, at least on paper, as though we might be given a choice at the next general election between something that looks like what we used to call the left-wing government, which is in favour of the working person, and on the other side, the national government, which is in favour of the capital classes, and also has these very sort of... right-wing, I'd say harsh, should we say medieval-type tendencies, even more so than the Labor Party.
If we look at the schooling system and how people become supposedly educated to go out and vote in the first place, the schooling system is empowered, that whole idea of public schooling and a public sort of consciousness and ideals being formed by... teachers' unions or curricula or whatever set by a state is a leftist principle, right? So if Phil Goff was to get in and rule with a left fist...
I don't know about that. I'd say that would be a rightist principle as well. I'd say look at the classic authoritarian regimes. They are education/re-education all over.
Those fascist regimes, yeah. But you're saying about, like, you were saying before how... the National Party always cuts back upon public education. Well, that's what I'm saying. They should, because it shouldn't exist in my mind.
Exactly. And then you get what happened in Quebec, which was basically the Catholics ended up running the entire system, because that was the fallback default position for a mass education. Cheapest, lowest common denominator education for the punters, and that was the Catholic Church. And yes, it is true that the Quebecois government did obviously assist them and actually basically enforce that system through not having a state system in a way, and also doing things to promote it. But would you honestly say, Will, that a Catholic education system and all of its, you know, I don't even have to insinuate.
Why does that have to be the alternative? Why weren't they backing the Montessoris, or Rudolf Steiner schools?
They were backing the Catholics, and that's just the way society.
I'm talking about a grassroots movement. I don't think the Catholics would be all too popular today to run anything to do with little children. That's not having a too much of a dig at the Catholics. But all I'm saying is if you get – I'm not for public education. No way. I can see what it tends towards, and it's worse propaganda than the Catholics could even dream of.
Well, I just wouldn't characterise it as particularly left-wing at all, mate. In my school that
it's
I went
to... collectivism. It's collectivism.
Well, in my school that I went to on the North Shore, they had, you know, this is back in the 1980s, they had South African Airways posters on the geography wall, and you go into the library and there'd be, this is South African apartheid regime diplomatic bulletins available just as like magazines in the magazine section. And you got the feeling that, hey, in the North Shore schools, apartheid is they're neutral, you know, they're neutral towards the apartheid system. And that
I'm not saying every school and every person in the school is a big raging leftist wearing sort of Maoist caps or anything. I'm just saying that the idea of it.
Saying some of them were actually very, very right-wing, mate. Very right-wing.
You're listening to the Very, Very Right-Wing Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will, and we'll be right back.
I want to dub it. Accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone.
For the times they are changing. Oh yeah. The times they are a changing. They're getting better and worse at the same time. And it is at a revelation. Our government, the National Party, I just realised they're kind of socialist. So guess what we're living under? We're living under National Socialism. I don't like the whole false political debate that kind of goes on in this country, you know, between National and Labour and all of this. I mean... Frankly, I have never voted for one of the major parties, and in all probability, never will. First person I voted for was the Greens, and second person I voted for was the legalized cannabis party. Right?
Here's my
and
point.
Maybe the next people I'm going to vote for is just no confidence, because after voting for these two parties and noticing that the Green Party isn't what they thought they were and the legalized cannabis party ain't going to get in, that only scumbag massive parties, you know, the ultimate duopoly of the equation, are going to wind up in power anyway. So therefore, having any confidence in the system, in my opinion, is whimsy.
But you have to choose a scumbag. You have to mark your scumbag. You have to choose between the... You have to try to vote against the worst scumbag, and that's why I always voted against that awful, and I'm sure even Will probably agree with me in summing up John Banks
Rodney
as being very right-wing. Very right-wing guy, John Banks.
John Banks is Hitler reincarnated. He's a little Hitler.
As Pol Pot.
But my point about public
education... But he loves animals. Go back to but he that. Loves animals.
Public education, state schools...
Hitler was a vegetarian because he was upset at the cruel treatment of animals. Oh, sorry. Well, go ahead.
So Hitler was a leftist too because he was vegetarian. That's more proof he was a leftist. But anyway...
He wasn't a smoker either.
He was an animal rights lover leftist. And,
non-smoker.
Anyway, public schools had to be publicly funded. And that's why I don't think the right-wing low-taxation model feeds into it. That's why I see it's a left-wing thing. And you know what I'm actually for? I'm not for Catholics running schools or Masons running schools either. I'm for parents teaching their young, just like the bird does outside. Just like, why is it so radical? Just like every other animal does on this planet. Why can't parents teach their young? Oh, that's dangerous. They might teach them stuff against the government. They might actually teach them history and how the banking system works. Wow.
And
who did Hitler? And to prove
we
my
need
point,
experts, Will. We need experts to teach us, Will.
Oh, of course.
Unionized experts who have got ministry training with a ministry certificate And then all the ministry people then start... It's a failed organization of resources, isn't it?
Tell me, Tim, who did Hitler start going after? Who were the first group of people that Hitler went after?
His spurned gay lovers back at Vienna University.
Homeschoolers. He started off by going after the homeschoolers. Anyone can look that up. And so, so it feeds into my backs up my theory once again. State education's evil.
I agree, mate. As I said, there was apartheid literature in our bloody library. It's absolutely disgusting. We had to sit through a rendition of the bloody frick, and the Americans would know what I'm talking about here. We had to sit through a rendition from the school bloody choir of the French class of the French national anthem in my school, at school assembly, and we all had to bloody well sit through it. And meanwhile, the two French government agents who, on presidential government orders from the Republic of France, had killed someone, murdered someone in our harbour, just down in our harbour, and had blown up a ship in an act of terrorism, and we had then caved into their bloody government because we were scared that they would block access to Europe for us, and we had to sit there through the French national anthem. Meanwhile, these bloody guys had just been sent to an atoll to spend a holiday, who had been locked up in our jails, and we caved into them, and we let them loose, and they spent a temporary holiday of a couple of years on a nice sunny atoll in the Pacific under French control, and then they went home to France and received bloody medals for murdering people in our harbour in terrorist acts, basically against us.
And we had to sit
national anthem in our school when this was going on. And that's why I want
to... Yeah, it shows you who owns you.
Yeah, I had the French too.
My father, in fact, this is interesting. My father told me yesterday a little bit of backstory on that. Did you know that New Zealand exports almost all of its lamb's brains specifically to France, right? And France threatened to stop importing all of our lambs, all of them, cut us off completely unless we release those two terrorists.
They eat anything, don't they?
Threatening us.
Yeah. All right. Overseas frickin' leverage. And this is the reason why politics simply is a fraud. And patently, in every single sector, that's all it is. It's all PR and fraud. That's the only thing that politics is. If I had a government...
And they made me sit through the bloody national anthem in school.
I know.
This is the school doing this. To celebrate our own... I want to swear, and I know I can't, because of the... but all I'm saying is that... You know, I wanted to walk out that day because they are making us celebrate our own defeat.
That's the upside-down world, Tim. It's all backwards.
Yeah. Speaking of which...
I love the French.
Don't you love school?
I love school and the French and the Nazis.
Would the Americans ever put up with that? No way.
No. They have that Frenchman herd up against the wall.
Good on the Americans for not putting up with the French. Good on the Americans, I say.
Yep. Just like my dad always says, there's only two things I hate in this world: racism and the French. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will. And our special guest has been Tim Selwyn from Tumeke at
Thanks so much, Vinnie and Will.
Interrupting.
Cheers, Tim.
We'll be back tomorrow, folks.